Coming up on today's BMW Motorrad Ride and Talk podcast, an in-depth discussion with BMW archivist Fred Jacobs about the history of BMW Motorrad. Take a listen. Over the years, I've had the privilege of riding BMW motorcycles all over the world. And the one thing I've come away with is that the only thing more extraordinary than the ride are the people you meet along the way. These are their stories. My name is Sean Thomas, and this is BMW Motorrad's Ride and Talk.
Something that you find out in your work and my job, every year or every moment, you are learning a little bit more.
Those of us that follow the history of BMW know that Munich, Germany is where it all started. More than 100 years ago, a small group of designers and engineers were producing airplane and vehicle engines, and in 1923 developed and sold their first complete production motorcycle. 100 years later, that very first building inhabited by BMW still stands and now features a museum dedicated to vehicles and artifacts that highlight BMW's diverse history. Today, we sit down with Fred Jacobs, head archivist for the BMW Group. Together, we discuss some of the remarkable exhibits on display at the museum and come to understand Fred's perspective on the rich history of BMW Motorrad. So, Fred, you have so many vehicles here, and it's my understanding that you are a fan of motorcycles first and foremost.
Yeah, it's I'm a BMW fan. Yeah. Every vehicle, also private, is a BMW.
Sure.
Car of my wife, the car of the daughter, motorcycle of the daughter, my motorcycle, oh, of course, and yeah. Two historic bicycles.
Oh, no kidding. And you have a F650 ST, is that correct?
I had one. No, yeah. I haven't. This is now on the way to a museum because there's a collector somewhere in the U.S. I told him, you don't have this bike. You need to have this bike.
And that's a rare one, I think. The 650 ST, that was...
The ST isn't so rare. Everybody thinks the F650 is it a real BMW, but the F650 is the most built bike in the 20th century.
Is it really?
Yeah. It's not the GS. The GS started with this high production number in 2001 or so on.
And it's my Louise's, and both my first BMWs were 650.
Yeah, it's a beginner's bike. I bought it with 5,000 kilometers. It was like new. I think it's a beginner's bike.
Yeah.
But you can do everything with this bike. It was especially in a city like Munich.
Yeah. I think the reason that you probably don't have a 650 ST in your museum is people are still busy out riding it, yeah?
No, we have one in the museum.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, yes, of course. I put it in and I said it's the most built bike. And it's because this bike is something special and it explains a lot about BMW. People ask what's typical for BMW, and the first answer is boxer engine, shaft drive,
sure.
And then you look at this bike. So it's a single cylinder and this is a... has no shaft drive, but it sold very well because this is a bike that gives you the pleasure of riding. So for me, it was perfect riding around Munich.
I think for me, it was the bike that I bought when I said I would love to own a BMW. I'm not sure that I can afford a BMW, but I'm going to try this one. I can afford. I'm going to try this and see if this type of motorcycle is for me.
Yeah, and also for me, the bike is, in my opinion, also important, it brought new customers to BMW. Mm. And also it changed the mind in motorcycle development for BMW. In early years, we tried to build a beginner's bike. Mm. And we make it like a regular bike, boxer engine, shaft drive, and so on.
Sure.
For example, the R45 in the 70s. Mm. This bike was, for production, more expensive than the 1000cc. So, and then we said, okay, we can't build a beginner's bike. And then someone said, okay, we built a beginner's bike, and it worked.
You know, when you come to this museum, you're, of course, going to see a lot of history of BMW, but the museum itself is historical, yeah? So this building and its location, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, we have two buildings. We have a public museum. This is now also a landmark and was built in 1918. And this is the oldest plant, so I'm happy to work here. Mm. So when I go out and I said, oh, around 100 years ago, Mr. Max Fritz, who developed the first motorcycle, perhaps he took also his coffee here or whatever. So it gives you every day an inspiration. And so we are glad that we could bought this part of the first factory back a few years before our 100th anniversary.
One of the most striking displays that you have is a motorcycle here that is not a BMW. I think it's a Victoria, and it has a BMW motor in it. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how it applies to the history of this place?
Yeah, BMW, you know, Bayerische Motorenwerke, Bavarian Motorworks, Engine Works. And we start with big engines. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have big, huge six-cylinder aircraft engines. Then we built four-cylinder engines for boats, for trucks and farming machines and so on. And then there comes in the idea, let us build a motorcycle engine. Mm-hmm. And we built a motorcycle engine, and this was a little success. So we got thousands that we built, and we delivered it to other manufacturers. So we have hundreds of motorcycle manufacturers at the beginning of the 20s here in Germany.
Yeah.
The center was in Berlin, the other around Nuremberg. And we support them with engines, because most of these companies came from bicycle business.
Mm-hmm.
And they could build frames and wheels and whatever, but they couldn't build engines.
Mm.
And the most important customer was Victoria in Nuremberg, one of the largest bicycle producers in the world. And also the first motorcycle was a success. And how should I say? It's only 180 kilometers away from Munich-Nuremberg. But in Bavaria, there is a kind of a conflict between this. You know, it's like football or soccer, football or American soccer. If you're closer, so you more you hate the other team. And it's also here that you some of the things are friendly, but the one is Franconia and Munich is Bavaria. Mm. Today, everything is Bavaria.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, we don't want to give these Bavarian guys the money for the engines. We built our own engines. Mm. And that was the reason that BMW said, okay, the most important customer is gone. He wants to build his own engine. Let us build our own motorcycle.
Mm.
And that happens in the winter 1922, 1923, when Max Fritz, the head of development, he was responsible for the successful aircraft engines also, he designed in a few weeks the whole bike.
Yeah. And this is the what we now know as the R32.
Yeah.
And the R32, can you help people understand what that symbolizes, the R and the 32 of the name?
We have also aircraft engines, and we have a lot of developments.
Mm.
And they put in a letter first.
Mm-hmm.
For example, M is for motor, for engine. G is for Getriebe gearbox, gearbox. And then we have R for frame, in German Rahmen. And we had this, so for example, on the R32, we have R32 for the frame, M33 for the engine, and G34 for the gearbox.
Mm.
But we didn't use this when we sold the bike.
Mm.
When we sold the bike, it was the BMW touring bike. And the next one was the BMW sports bike. And the next one was the BMW single cylinder bike. But then on the second generation, we looked, what can we use? And in Germany also, there have been some other manufacturers. They had an R in their typing, or in KR, like Victoria. This was KR1. That means Kraftrad 1.
Mm.
Rad means wheel, but means in former times the whole vehicle.
Hmm.
Then we said, okay, R can also stand for Rad, but it was a development number, and they changed the internal system sometimes. Therefore, there is no logic behind. I tried to find it out 30 years, and sometimes you have 15 years, you find a system behind, and you can't find the system behind. I think we started in the 69 with the /5 with.
Yeah.
R50/5, and this has 500cc, R75/750. Mm-hmm. Later then with the four Wolf bikes, we had the whole capacity of the bike. So that means R1100 RS. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's the same in the car.
Mm.
So I think time is changing, and you are using other technical details for separates similar models than in early times. Everything was made about capacity.
When you look at the R32 compared to the motorcycles of the day, right away you see these innovations, a drive shaft versus a belt drive, for example, and an electric headlight versus a gas powered headlight. And even the engine position, which, you know, we think of the Boxer twin as always being an opposing twin where both cylinders are facing the air. But when it was originally designed, manufacturers were putting the motor in such a way that one cylinder was forward and one was back, kind of like a V twin. So there's a lot of different ways that we saw BMW right off the bat start coming up with new ideas to recreate a motorcycle that went outside of what we were normally seeing.
I think we never have been the first boxer engine in a motorcycle. We haven't made this first. So there was also shaft drive from 1904 with a Belgian FN bike, mm-hmm. for example. And we have the boxer also in this position, also in a British bike, ABC. Before, I think the point was the combination to bring it together and the whole concept. When I looked to the R32, it's nothing that I said, oh, this is a world premiere and we have a world patent. So, but for me, if you look on the shape, you see it's like a kind of triangle form. They start with a engine, and British American name is for the boxer engine is flat engine. This engine is really flat, so you don't have to start with a bicycle design and put an engine on. So it was really, they built a motorcycle around the engine, and it tried to make the best quality. I think this is rooted in the history of aircraft engines. You need to have quality. If the engine on a motorcycle stops, okay. If an engine on an airplane stops, you have really problems. So I think this was in mind of all to do the best. So to have to look to the best quality, to don't look to other bikes, how they do it. And there are some details that I said, oh, I had never seen it before. For example, if you look on the R32, we have this black bike and with the white stripes. Mm-hmm. So it was normal at this time that motorcycle manufacturer have their own color and they offer the bikes only in one color.
Yeah.
So it could be a light green, a light blue, mm-hmm. or a red or whatever. And BMW's house color was black with nice white stripes. Mm. But we don't have our name on the fuel tank. Mm-hmm. We have only the badge. Mm-hmm. When I looked at this time, it means Harley Davidson, Triumph, Wanderer, and Germany, NSU. Everybody, every company used the full name.
Sure.
And we are proud and said, this is the BMW badge. You know it or you don't know it, but we don't write it on the bike. So that's something that you find out and you work on my job. Mm-hmm. So that means every year or every moment you are learning a little bit more.
So the next thing that we see in the museum, we go straight from understanding the very first BMW, and the very next thing we see is an exhibit on making motorcycles go fast. And it's fascinating to me that this seems to have always been part of the lifeblood of BMW and motorcycling in general. How fast can we make it go?
I think, yeah, this is in the blood was the competition with the best and also the best in the world. I think in the early years, we have two reasons to do that. The one thing is, I think, yeah, to compare with the other bikes, the other manufacturers. Today in the magazines, you have the 8 top super bikes, the 6 best off-road bikes, and so on. But at this time, if you look in the magazines, there was a description of the bikes, but nothing to compare it. If you look in the newspaper today, for example, here in Munich, a very big daily newspaper, on every weekend they have a part for vehicles and traffic. At this time they didn't have. But if there was a race, they wrote on it. So it was very important for public relation. And of course, you can have on your advertising, if you look in the 20s and 30s, also British bikes and so on. Last year, 145 wins. And then, of course, at the end of the 20s, we have the fastest bike in the world.
Yeah.
So nobody knows the race in Italy more difficult than the race in France, but the fastest motorcycle in the world, you have it all in the world. And with the beginning of this racing activities and also international activities, then started also the export in several countries. For example, the 6 days event in 1926 with the R37, there are a lot of drawings and sketches from the journalists about a perfect BMW, the German motorcycle. Then you look the next year, we sold bikes to England, we sold bikes to America, to South America, in whole Europe. So people read it, and the bike was very expensive. But I said, okay, this seems that this is a very good bike because a newbie started, not a perfect racer, and he won a gold medal there.
Mm-hmm.
The other point is, of course, for technical innovations. You test, the racetrack was the test rig, the test bench for everything like the rear suspension or the hydraulic telescopic fork and everything.
It's very interesting in motorcycles and performance because the first idea, it seems like, for going fast was just get as much power to the rear tire as possible. And you look at the bikes that existed then that were breaking records and they look dangerous. You know, you pointed out this bike does not have brakes, for example. It doesn't need brakes. This bike is just there to go fast. And, you know, we know today the aerodynamics, of course, and suspension and the type of tires that you use and the electronics, that's all a huge factor. But back then, we had none of this. It was just the motor and the rider tucked down and go fast. That was a very pioneering time, I think.
Yeah, and it was also pioneering with aerodynamics. Of course, they learned. If I go close to the handlebar, I'm a little bit faster, and so on. Yeah. And they found out that it was trial and error. Because aerodynamic was, they learned at this moment, it's easier to go faster with aerodynamic innovations. Mm. Also the details, we talk about brakes. Okay, they have no brakes, but what's about the tires? The tires haven't been made for such a speed, for such an acceleration.
Mm. As we dive so deep into the history of Motorrad, we, of course, have to remember that BMW was making cars at the same time. And and it's interesting to me how today we see a lot of technology that is maybe born on the car side that finds its way into the motorcycle side and maybe vice versa. Was that the case historically? Did we see development of cars having an influence on the motorcycles and vice versa in any way?
Oh, I'm not sure, of course, but if you look on an anti-brake blocking system on a car and on a motorcycle, they are different.
Yeah.
But we have all the facilities, and we have this knowledge from there. We didn't start at point zero, so we can use it. But for example, the size and the weight is a big problem. And then, of course, if you have a two-wheeler and a four-wheeler, when the system came on the car business, everybody wants to have it.
Yeah.
And we have it on a motorcycle. Nobody wants to have it because I can brake better than this. I want to. And then they learned, for example, that it helps. We talked about my motorcycle. I have the F1 800R, and it was the first bike with such a system that I owned. And I had my first trip with my daughter. She has the same bike. Then I had I need to have a brake behind a corner. Nobody thought there is a traffic jam. And it's so easy. And of course, we learned from car, the catalytic converter, for example. We have this technology, but it's always the problem if people want to buy it. Mm. But especially on the ABS and on the catalytic converter, we have been the first on a serial bike. So we also have the customers that want to have this technology.
Yeah. There was a point in historically when we look at the line of motorcycles that you have in your museum where things start getting colorful. We start seeing motorcycles with lots of different colors, and this just was not the way of it for Motorrad for so long. What changed and how did that come to be?
Yeah, we go back we look back in our history, it was absolutely geared. It was kind of black with white stripes.
That was sort of a signature for BMW, yeah?
Yeah.
If you saw a black bike with white pinstripes, then you were looking at a BMW most times, yeah?
Of course, the black color, other manufacturers had other colors, but always own one color during that time. Mm. It's not like cars. In the 30s, you have red, green, blue, black, and so white, and so on. But the motorcycle, also the British bikes, the American bikes, one color.
Yeah.
But then at the end of the 50s, it started that the BMW bikes at this time looked a little bit old-fashioned. And also in the American market in the 60s, we decide to have red, gray, green, blue. Because before we had only black bikes, and from 61, our brand shaper, the 69S, was like a negative. So everything that on the other bikes have been black was their white.
Yeah.
Everything that was white is their black.
There's a rumor out there that somebody just went over to the car side and borrowed some paint and brought it over and said, okay, you want bikes that are not just black? Here you go. We've got a red one, for example, which was the same shade of red that you use on the cars, yeah?
Yeah, we have absolutely the same color. I think they didn't want to mix it. So because at this time, it was only a few hundred. Mm. At this time, the car business was huge. Mm. So we had to remember that in the 60s, we sold less than 10,000 bikes a year. So it was not such a big market.
Yeah.
And it was easier. And it was common also over the other companies. Everything started in the middle of the 60s, that there was a change in the image of the motorcycle. Mm. Before, it was more or less not a BMW and not some other as a cheap form of car.
Mm.
If you want to have mobility, you start with a bicycle, then a motorcycle, and then car. Mm. But in the 60s, there was a change. I'm old enough. for example, what happens with Easy Rider?
Yeah.
So there was it's not a cheap, it's something special. A symbol for freedom, for sportiness, for speed, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that everything happened that started in the 70s. That is, you have this image change away from a cheap kind of transport to freedom, hobby, and so on. And in the 50s and 60s, the decision was motorcycle or car, and from the 70s on, car and motorcycle.
Hmm.
So you have it as we have the motorcycle today. The whole week, working in the office, the same thing, and then on a weekend or a week that you say, I want to go a little bit.
I have a friend in the USA that also cares for a museum, as you do. And we spoke about restoration, and he explained to me the three basic schools of thought that he must consider during restoration. Because inevitably, any vehicle that's sitting for any period of time, no matter what it's made of, it's going to start to deteriorate. So one philosophy is you restore that vehicle with the original materials, but then you run into the problem of those materials are the original and they're not as advanced as today, so they're going to deteriorate as well. Then another philosophy is to restore it with modern materials, which means it's not really the original. And then a third philosophy still is to not restore it at all, because that is all part of its history. Even if the vehicle deteriorates right before your eyes, that is absolutely original and that's its life path. Are those the philosophies that are applied here, and how do you apply them to maintain the products that you have on display here?
Yeah, I think we also go these three ways. For example, if we have a bike that's still in original condition, for example, we have a sidecar unit from the 15s with original painting and everything, we still care on this condition.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you restore it, you can one time restore. A restoration you can't make go back in front. If it's restored, it's restored. It's not longer original.
Mm-hmm.
So we try. And also we know, and we made the same mistakes. Like everyone, it's the same in car business. In 80s, 90s of last century, you want to make it better than new.
Mm-hmm.
Shiny, the museum shiny. And this philosophy destroyed a lot of original. substance. Mm. Also, the bikes that we have, because people come to the museum, looks nice. What happened? You don't restore it. You don't very careful. You don't have the money for real restoration. It's more expensive than to make it shiny and to look on every detail. So that's the one. But what you say, you have an original bike, you keep it original, and you try to have it with original spare parts. Mm. The second one is if you ride the bike, there are some new things that help you. For example, the old bikes lost oil because you can't do it very well in the 50s. Today you have other materials for restoration.
Sure.
And of course you use it. Or you need light signals on it. We have no light signals until the 60s in Germany, but it's for safety. Yeah. You go to traffic. So if we know we use this bike special for riding, we restore it a little bit on another way than the original. That helps. And then, of course, sometimes is the question, what's original? I remember now we have all this, especially with the R90 and the R8 in the scene, that people build their own R90 on a workshop and so on. And we have the same also in the 70s. As I told you, old-fashioned 60-year BMW, they tried to make an easy rider with an ape hanger handlebar and a long fork and so on. And this motorcycle has 15 years the original condition and now 50 years this easy rider look, what's original. So I think if you have only a few left, you have to keep it original. But people say when it start with this coffee bike scene and they take an original R100 RT and they build a bopper or whatever, and I said, and there's no historical heritage that you have to protect, because there are a lot of other 100 RT on the market and in the museums around.
Probably my favorite motorcycle in BMW's lineup is anything in the GS line. I love the GS. And I, of course, expected to come to this museum and see an R80 GS, which you have. But one of the things that fascinated me was that you realize when you're standing in this museum that things like riding off-road has a heritage that goes well beyond the first R80 GS. You see some of the original BMWs being ridden across country in the dirt with luggage mounted to them, and riders, you know, pioneering, going to places where there was no asphalt and no concrete. So you start to understand when you stand here that things like riding fast and things like riding off-road did not start with what we consider to be the first models. They started long, long before that with innovators creating motorcycles to do this.
Yeah, we have this photo albums from private riders. We have, for example, I showed you the one that two Dutch riders went from Indonesia, Java at this time, to the Netherlands, and they went days around the deserts and so on, and they don't have these maps, they don't have this GPS. And so that's what I mean. That's, of course, this motorcycle was always special, that people also explore the world and so on. If you want to travel around the world as a globetrotter with a tent on your back and a few things with you, you can do it. And if you can do that, of course, you can go in the Alps and ride a little bit on the small unpaved roads.
Sure.
It should work. So that's, I think, the GF thing.
One of the most striking things I saw in this museum was seeing a modern S1000RR race bike here, which we all know is the BMW's pinnacle of competition sport bike. But then we also see a race bike made from the 1920s and 30s. And there's a lot of carryover between those two machines. You know, a lot of the positioning of the body on the bike is very similar. And it's fascinating to me to think in another 100 years, there will be another bike or many bikes that have a completely different look and feel, but carry some of those same things. The wheels will always probably be in the same place. The handlebars will be, and the seat will probably be in the same place. But the technology that propels you will change. And that's really exciting, I think.
Yeah, and I think especially on the race bikes, you look for the superlative, most power, less weight, best aerodynamics and so on. I think that's also a line that starts from beginning on. As we said, they don't have fairings, but I learned very early, if I have this kind of handlebar, I can ride it lying on the fuel tank, and on the long straights, I'm a little bit faster than before. Yeah. And of course, if I change that, I have 3 horsepowers more. And if I put the light away, I'm earning 2 kilograms or whatever. As I know, the first version of the double R, these have been the 2 headlights with the less weight. So always these guys looked, there is 10 grams, there's 20 grams. And if I take this, it's a little bit better aerodynamic. And I push the engine there is 1-2 horsepower more. So that's all over the 100 years. And if we talk about racing, I think that would be perhaps the same in 100 years.
Mm. It's a significant year. It's the 100 years anniversary for BMW Motorrad. And of course, you're in the best place to see machines from the past 100 years. Will you have any sort of a special exhibit here to commemorate this?
Yeah, we will have one in the museum. Hmm. My colleagues are working on it. So then, of course, we have the BMW Motorrad Days in Berlin. Hmm. Berlin, we presented the R32 on the fairground 100 years ago, and on the same fairground are the Motorrad Days. So I think this year would be a fantastic year for BMW fans, not only for fans for historic bikes. I think there's party time.
Germans know how to party. That's been my experience.
Yeah, and no sense of humor, and that's always the problem.
Fred, how can people learn more about this museum and how to find you?
Oh, people can, of course, come to the museum and have a look to the bikes. There are some fantastic books on the market. And I think if you go to a search engine, I don't know the exact name, I'm an old man, but if you look BMW motorcycle history or in your language.
Sure. Fred, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us. It was really amazing. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
We very much hope you have enjoyed this episode. We want to hear from you, so please rate, comment, and share your thoughts about this podcast. We have many more episodes on the way, so please subscribe, follow along, and share your requests for future episodes of the BMW Motorrad Ride and Talk podcast.